Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, this is Mark Striegel. Just want to remind you to support me on Patreon, patreon.com/talkingmetal. And, you know, do a $5 a month donation or pledge. You support me with $5 a month. I send you a Talking Metal t-shirt. I give you bonus content, including an extra podcast every week and videos and polls and a chance to talk with me on Zoom about the things that we love, like heavy metal and hard rock, especially that classic stuff. That's generally what we cover here on the show. So anyways, we're going to listen to the live show. There's a video of this up on my YouTube page, youtube.com/talkingmetal. But this is just the audio, no edits. It was a rough episode at times. There were some connection issues with Corey Glover and John and I talking over each other and all that type of stuff. So, but it still's fun. You know, I kind of, after it was over, I was like, oh boy, that episode was rough. But I just went back and listened and watched the majority of it. It was actually not bad. So I hope you enjoy it. And the guests are great. Man, Corey Glover, Hank from Dash Vodka, Bobby Blitz. You can't go wrong. Let's get into it right now. And a big shout out to the top tier supporters on Patreon today: Andrew Miller, Brad Dahl, Chris Riley, Dan Gerwan, Denny Striegel, Hank Reeves, who's actually on this episode, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Matt Carroll, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, and last but not least, Steven Saylor. Steven, I hope you heard the Jordan Rudess episode. We gave you a shout out in the middle of it. Anyways, those are the top tier people on Patreon. Those guys really, I mean, wow, you guys are awesome. Everyone on Patreon's awesome, but just today I really wanted to give a lot of love to those people in the top tier. Anyways, again, this is the live show from May 20th, 2021 here on the Talking Metal Podcast. You can watch this on YouTube, youtube.com/talkingmetal. Let's do it. Another edition of Talking Metal Live. John, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you? How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well. And you and I were talking today, and we decided that this is probably going to be the last time we do this in this format. Next time, there's no reason that we can't get together at your place and still do the virtual guests. You know, if we have a guest who wants to,
right,
you know, Zoom in or Google in from the West Coast or somewhere else in the world, we'll still do that. But there's no reason for you and I, and maybe Emily could even join us,
to be there.
Absolutely.
Or place, or even out at a location doing this live with the help of the crew and the team that we work with. I think it's time that we venture outside of this basement here and go live again.
Absolutely. So guys, what happened was I texted Mark earlier and I said, hey, Mark, do you and Emily want to come over and do this in person? We're all vaccinated. We're all fine. We're going to be safe. And we can all just hang out here in the Silver Spacecraft 2.0 studio. And then afterwards, we can hit right. a bar. But, babysitters are involved and a lot of other things. So we decided this one, we're going to keep the original format. But then we're going to be bringing all of you listeners and people who are watching the show some special stuff, because we're going to harken back, as they say, to our 2000s roots. And we're going to do some on location at bars. We're going to have guests come into the studio with us, and we're going to really revive the old vibe of the original talking metal.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, it's so weird, because I've said this before, but one of the last things we did before this whole thing shut us down for a while was you and I shot that talking metal sizzle reel in your apartment. And so we gotta start things off again. And I say next month in June, it will happen. We'll do another one of these, and we will be probably live from that location right there. I want to stand.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I think this is where we should start it out. Yeah, we'll start it out here, and then from there, you know, it's only going to go up, as they say.
Yeah. All right, man. Well,
I got visual aids here.
I've been doing this new thing where I don't drink on Thursdays. I've been trying to, like, not drink on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Yeah, I've gone completely, healthy drinking.
You're good. You're good.
Yeah, I'm being slightly sarcastic. But anyways,
okay.
Let's have a toast. I'm gonna break my tradition and drink a light beer right now. Light beer.
Okay. I'm drinking this right here.
Oh, Dash, of course, vodka. The Dash vodka.
I've got guess what? This is also, I'm gonna use the same word again, hearkening back to my 1990s roots, because I'm drinking a Dash vodka with cranberry juice. Not cranberry juice. Grapefruit juice. Believe me, I'm just starting out. Grapefruit juice. And the reason is because of Rob Fiorentino, my old bandmate and one of my best buddies, who I haven't spoken to in so long. We got to rekindle that relationship. But anyway, that was his drink. So in honor of him, Paisley Babylon fame, my old band, I'm drinking his favorite drink. And then as a backup, I got a Miller High Life. Miller beer.
Miller High Life. Cool. That's
Miller beer.
Actually, well, that I got a Miller Light. It's not a High Life.
Oh, I like that. That's nice. Yeah. I like that fancy bottle you have. That's pretty cool.
Right. It's almost like the kind you'd buy at PNC Art Center or something when you're at a show.
I love it. Speaking of PNC
Art Center, John, Mark, what's that?
I said, speaking of PNC Art Center, I've been driving all around New Jersey in my new car, which is technically used. However, it's new to me, and literally for me to get to you is like 1, 2, 3, no sweat. And I can get to the PNC Art Center, and I can go all these different places now. So I feel like a whole new world has opened up for me.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Thank you. Great. Thank you.
It's great.
Because
we'll definitely get you out here. I think the next time for sure I have to come there. Maybe Emily will come with me. We'll see. I think that's where we got to start it at, right in front of all.
Yeah, we got to start it at the Spacecraft 2.0 in honor of John Simpson, who made up that name. So.
All right. Right on.
Yeah.
Cool,
so,
man.
Mark,
go ahead.
I'm going to ask you, what's up? You got some new stuff going on? Tell me. You're moving.
Yeah, we're moving to a new house. I got a new job. So a lot of changes, good changes. The kids are slowly getting back to in-person school, not full-time, but it's better than, completely virtual. So things are definitely changing here. And I went to my first concert, man, my first concert in a long time.
Yes, I saw the pictures.
Last Saturday night.
With Jordan Rudess, tell me about that show, because I saw the pictures and I purposely haven't asked you about it because I wanted you to tell me on the air. So tell me.
Yeah, it was great. Emily and I went to the theater before the show. We met up with Jordan from Dream Theater and did a short interview. It was supposed to be 10 minutes. It actually lasted like closer to 13, 14 minutes. And he was great, man. He was great. And he then we went to dinner. Then we came back to the theater and he played a socially distanced concert, and it was just great. It was him sitting at a grand piano. You know, you think of him with theater and the volume and everything.
Yeah, all kind of crazy keyboards up in here.
Yeah, he played everything from Bach to Pink Floyd to, of course, Dream Theater to solo music to Liquid Tension Experiment, all on the piano. And, you know, he went to Juilliard. This guy is no joke, man. He was just an absolutely beautiful piano player. And I just felt myself getting lost in the music, being in a room. They even had the bar open, you know, so you could drink. And, you know, they said if you're not drinking, you had to have your mask on. But thankfully for me, I was drinking the whole time.
So you can take the mask off.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I love that. Yeah. And, that's one reason to drink. You don't have to wear the mask when you're drinking, right? So
right,
we're not trying to promote alcohol use, but anyway. But here's the thing, Mark. I you know, have studied music, as you know, as you have as well. And the thing is that no matter how many lessons I've taken, the one thing that I wish that I could do, and I can't fully do it, is sit at a piano and entertain people all night. I could probably entertain people for a few minutes, but I don't think I could. Well, I know for a fact I couldn't do it all night. And without question, I couldn't do it the way Jordan can do it. And I admire those guys, I think, almost more than I admire anyone at this point. I love people who can sit down at an instrument solo and just take it on their own.
Yeah. Well, you want to hear something crazy? He didn't even bring the piano. It was the house piano at the theater, the Chopac Theater in South Orange. So he literally just showed up and played their piano and did it amazingly. And, you know, they of course had mics on the piano, and I noticed there was definitely a little reverb, you know, to get that really big sound out of it. Mm-hmm. But it was absolutely stunning, and it just filled the theater. Just this man sitting there at a piano. And he sang one song, On the Road Again by Willie Nelson.
Wow.
Kind of
That
joke,
is amazing.
You know,
I mean,
not really a joke, but you know, he kind of did his own version of it.
That's a true musician, and I love that. And I mean, if he ever comes around again, I will absolutely go. And I've always respected him as a musician, and that's pretty awesome. Juilliard. I mean, that is, in my opinion, one of the top, if not the top school. I mean, Berklee, of course, where I went. And a lot of other great musicians went. I consider Juilliard and Berklee probably the top two schools. Juilliard is a little more classical. I think it's 1,000% more classical than Berklee is. But Berklee is a little bit of contemporary music, jazz, you know, classical, and a little bit of a mix. But Juilliard is really top of the line. So
right on.
So sure.
Well, listen, we got Corey Glover coming up in just a bit. We have Bobby Blitz. Boy, my mind went blank there for a second. Bobby Blitz of Overkill. What an amazing lineup tonight. And real quick, we're going to bring on a family member of yours in just a second to say a quick hi before Corey joins us. But real quick, John, big news, Ace Frehley and Alice Cooper. Man, Kiss, Alice Cooper, the greatest bands of the 70s, practically doing a tour together. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I cannot wait to see this. Any details you can give us?
So let me tell you, Ace and Alice have been friends for over 30 years, and they love each other personally, and the bands and the crews and everybody gets along great. And we've done some other tours with Alice, one in Australia, and we've done select dates throughout the United States with Alice, and they've always been huge successes. So the idea came up, and I've known about it for a while, and we've been putting all the finishing touches on it to get it together. And it's going to start in September, go through October, and it's going to be a month of pure, cool rock and roll insanity, and the fans are going to be in for a huge treat. Let me just tell you that.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I told you they're not playing New York City or the tri-state area, really. So actually, there's a show in Connecticut, I think. But
yeah, I have to take another quick look at the dates. But I believe there is definitely something in that area. There's stuff that's not too far from here.
Yeah, we'll talk because I definitely need to get out to see that tour. It'd be fun to get on a plane and fly somewhere cool and see it. But we'll
I love flying to gigs.
But we do have Corey from Living Color coming up shortly. So let's do this. I keep asking you, John. I keep saying, how is Dash Vodka so freaking smooth? And and you agreed with me, but neither one of us really know. So I said, let's
what makes it that smooth. Right. So we need to find
let's
out.
Let's get the guy who would know the answer to this. Let's get Hank Reeves to come on briefly and talk with us about this amazing vodka that he has. And I know he's standing by. So anytime you guys want to pass.
Hank,
what's happening, guys?
Hank, I love it. How are you?
Doing good. How y'all doing?
I'm doing great, Hank. And I love that you got the Talking Metal shirt on tonight.
Oh, I wouldn't go anywhere without it, my man. Nowhere.
Thank you. Hank wears it every day. That's his uniform. When he goes out, he always has a Talking Metal shirt on.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. So, hey, everything looking good in Jersey. I'm glad to see you guys are going back on tour here shortly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're getting ready to go back and rock and roll again. And things are starting to open up again. And I think all of us, music and Dash and vodka fans, are going to be happy because we got a lot of good things in store for everyone, for sure. And oh, Hank, I love it. So, nice. You're coming to us. Real quick, Hank, you're coming to us from Colorado tonight, right? Not Texas.
That's correct. Yeah, Rennie's over in Detroit with her mom and dad, and I'm over here getting the cabin set up for all the visitors we got coming up this year.
I love that. Awesome. And I think Mark and I should be two of those visitors, right?
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Yeah, I'm counting on it, man.
We'll do it real quick.
I wanted to technically ask you about your vodka, because when Emily and I drink it here at home, we notice that there's like a smoothness. There's not that sharp taste that you get from some vodka. What distinguishes Dash from the others? Like, is there something technically you guys do to it to get that smooth taste that you could briefly explain to me? I know nothing about how you make vodka. So in layman's terms, or however they say it, how do you get Dash to be so smooth and great?
Well, what you have to start off with is you have to have, you know, the best ingredients possible. And so we're talking about Thompson raisins and wheat from Michigan. Oh, no, New York. Okay, that's where the wheat comes from. And what you do is, you know, we have these 5,000-liter fermentation reactors that have a cooling jacket. And so what happens is you mix water and yeast and, you know, the different components, and it's an exothermic reaction. So there's heat given off, which can, you know, impart some poor tasting characteristics. So you keep it cool. You control the rate of fermentation. That's the scientific part of this deal. Then what happens is, you know, you go to your pot still, and the liquor is distilled 7 times. So that's an extreme amount of time. It's just amazing. And what it does is during those processes, all of the bad characters that are in the mix come out. You know, there's different compounds that are found, and these are driven out. So, you know, you have that. What comes out of the pot still is about 190 proof. Of course, everything is explosion proof in the distillery. And at that point, we cut it back with water, and it's filtered through crushed coconut hulls. I think that's really a key factor here, guys, because there's no taste of coconut. It's just ground up holes of coconut. But the filtration is incredible. And so there's some more bad characters that are taken out during that process. Most of your vodkas are filtered through carbon. And carbon just sounds caustic to me to begin with. You know, it's not something that I would want to flow liquid through and drink. But anyway, that's kind of it in a nutshell. You know, we use a reverse osmosis water system, so we have pure water. Everything's got to be pure. And a lot of this is art. There's a lot of art involved. There's probably more art involved than the technical chemistry. But that's where Ali Ansari comes in. He's the master distiller, the founder, and he's an amazing person. I hope you guys can come up sometime, meet him at the distillery.
Very good. And Hank, that is great info. Thank you for explaining that to us. Where should people go to find out more about Dash Vodka online?
Okay, so you go to dashvodka.com. That's the website. Right now, the product is available in Texas through the spec stores. There's about 200 plus spec stores in Texas. So we've got quite a following here. And, you know, we should be in Colorado within a month or so. So, you know, it's all about getting out there and, you know, being on these this social media platform is the answer to all of this. You know, being with you guys, getting introduced to Chips Enough, who led me to Harlan, who's the owner of Monsters of Rock, who's on Dash Radio Network. And, you know, we're being exposed to 700,000 people a day.
Amazing. So,
wow.
Amazing.
Big deal.
And I love that there's Dash Vodka and Dash Radio. It's like the perfect combination.
It's just like Chip said. As soon as he heard it, Chip, I mean, you could just see his eyes flip open.
Yeah. And guys, we're talking about all of our friends, Chips Enough. Like one of my favorite rockers in the whole world, who I've known
since
the 90s.
He is so amazing.
So are you going to be doing something with Monsters?
We're at the point. What's that?
Oh, I was going to. Are you going to be doing something with Monsters of Rock?
All the heavy lifting has been done. And, you know, the distillery is beautiful. It's in great condition. It can do about 20,000 cases a month. And so we're actively looking for investors. And people want to become a shareholder in Dash Vodka, this is the time to do it before we launch onto these major platforms. And I want to thank you guys for what you've done for us. And I also want to mention how amazing it is that you guys have done 920 episodes of this show.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And it's just like,
thank you.
Like amazing. You know, whenever I want to entertain myself, I just go online and I watch the shows where you're playing with the folks you're interviewing.
That's we haven't done one of those. The Talking Metal Jams. We need to do another
one. Yeah, those were great. Right.
That is so cool.
As a matter of fact, we have one of my favorite jams was something we did, and we called the band Turtlehead. And I think Bobby Blitz Ellsworth from Overkill made up that name, and he's going to be on the show today with you.
That's
and
great.
The cool thing is for all the watchers and listeners, go to YouTube and look up Talking Metal with Bobby Blitz Ellsworth and Turtlehead, and you will see a great jam that we did with Frank Bello of Anthrax, Mike Portnoy of Dream Theater, Mark and I and Bobby, and we did a Motorhead song. So that was, I think, one of my favorite. I mean, there's no question, it was one of my favorites. They were all my favorites, but that was a highlight.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Well, Hank, we just wanted to get you on here because we enjoy your vodka so much. We wanted to thank you for the vodka and turn on the Talking Metal listeners and viewers to your great product. And what can they do? Can they ask for it in stores? Is that helpful?
Yes, that's helpful. If you go to your local package store and ask for it, you know, that's helpful. And of course, it's just a matter of time before it's all over the place, but we're on startup mode.
Okay. Well, please keep us posted, and we will keep drinking the Dash for sure.
Drink the Dash. Give my best to Emily and Lynn, guys. All the best to you.
Absolutely, Hank. And give my best to Rennie and Uncle Johnny and Gloria and everybody and Sarah and the whole team, the whole Dash team.
You got it, man. You got it. All the best, guys.
Take care. All the best.
Hank.
Thanks, Hank.
Here's to you.
All right. Great checking in with Hank. We love Hank. We love Dash Vodka for sure. And we love Living Color, man. I tell you, the first time I ever saw Living Color, John, was at Trenton State College. They had like a cafeteria or the gymnasium. I went to see this band called Fishbone, and opening up for Fishbone was Living Color. And I seem to remember that they had, remember the Guitar Player magazine?
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I still have a subscription to it.
Well, do you remember they used to put like records in the Guitar Player magazine?
Oh, like a little, maybe like, is it a plastic record? Not like, not made
yeah,
out
it was
of
like
vinyl,
within the pages.
Yeah,
yeah, there was a record
like a
and you
of
could,
plastic.
You could rip it out and you could play it. And one of the records had Cult of Personality by Living Color.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I got into them really like early on. And the way I remember it, our memories aren't always correct, but they really took a little while to catch on. We can ask Corey about this, but they took a while to catch on MTV and on the radio. But the album, I believe, had been out a little bit before it kind of really hit. And at least that's how I remember it. Because I remember suddenly there was this band that I had discovered through Guitar Player Magazine.
Yeah, way before.
Opening for Fishbone. Yeah, suddenly they like kind of blew up. And it was like months later that everyone knew
now,
about them.
Mark, let me refresh my memory. What year did Cult of Personality become a hit on MTV?
Oh, geez, you're putting me on the spot here. I believe it was 89.
Okay, I was thinking 88, but I think maybe you're right. Maybe
it might have been 88, actually, now that you mention it. Let's see, yeah. Well, yeah, Vivid. It was on the Vivid record, 88. You're right, 88. Yep.
Okay, so here's what's weird is that I was going to ask Corey about this. Will Calhoun, the drummer, was at Berkeley when I was there. So I was at Berkeley in 87 to 91-ish. So maybe he was going to school there right around the same, right before the band really broke big on MTV.
I don't know. You know, I'm not exactly
We'll have to
sure.
check it out. But I could swear 1,000% Will was at Berkeley when I was there. So, and when you were there too, Mark, like, so yeah,
really,
he was there when we were both there, but
yeah, it could be, it could very well be that I don't know. But
we recently hooked up with Corey at the Iridium, the famous jazz club where Les Paul used to play every Monday night back in 2019. And he did a great show with our really good friend Mike Orlando from Adrenaline Mob and numerous other great bands. And so that was the last time that I saw Corey or spoke to Corey. And we're really glad to get Corey back on the show tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. We are waiting for him. I'm not sure he's logged on just yet, but hopefully soon. If we don't get him, let's see, 7:27. If we don't get him in the next few minutes, I will text him and just remind him to get online.
Log on.
John, let's talk about your band while we're waiting for Corey
to
join us. Any plans yet? I know it's still kind of early, but any plans for Like It, the band that you play guitar with, to return to the stage?
Yes, I have some news, and the news is going to be about an announcement. So we're going to announce something towards the end of the month, and it's a big deal for us, and it's a big deal for any band. But we're gonna return to the stage on a major level for sure in 2022, and I'm hoping that we can return to the stage just on a normal level for just to get out there and rock and play for some of our friends and some of our fans actually in 2021. But all the people across the United States, we're going to definitely be back out there in 2022. And we're going to make our first announcement at the end of May. So in probably 2 weeks, you'll be hearing some news unlike it. And the other general news I can tell you is Like It has started rehearsing again. And Jamie Ross is currently back in the New York area for a while, even though Jamie lives in
Tell us who Jamie Ross is. A lot of people might not know.
Okay.
Who that is.
Okay. Jamie Ross is the lead vocalist of Like It. And he also used to be he's the guitarist and lead vocalist of Like It. He was the bass player and vocalist in a group called Laughing Sky as well. But Jamie is really the ringleader of Like It, and he's the reason it all works together. And I was a fan of Jamie's since I moved to New York in the in the early 90s. So Jamie lives in Las Vegas, but he's been hanging out back here in New York. And we have started to rehearse again up at Mike Lincoln, the drummer of Like It's studio in Union City, New Jersey. And we have our great bass player, Hide, who has a great restaurant called something Kokoron, and is it sushi Kokoron? I'm going to think of the name. There's a before the end of this podcast. It's something Kokoron. It's a Japanese restaurant in Manhattan, and it's amazing. And Hide is the head chef, and it's his place. His name is we call him Yan Morningstar, but his real name is Hide.
Right on. Cool. Have we gotten Corey yet, guys?
Oh.
No Corey yet. All right, I'm going to text him.
The restaurant is Sukiyaki Kokoron. So Sukiyaki Kokoron, go check it out in the Lower Manhattan, Soho, East Village area, somewhere around there, guys. But it's a high-end Japanese restaurant. So if you want some Kobe beef or Kobe, as they say, that's what you're going to get when you go there. And it's going to be prepared by none other than the bass player of Like It.
And what happened to the old bass player? Don't you want to talk about that?
So no, Dave Messenger. He's still part of the Like It family, and I'm sure he'll pop up on different gigs as well. Dave is a computer genius. Okay, Dave Messenger is a computer genius. That's his real name. He's not a messenger, but he could be if he wanted to. So anyway, he's a computer genius, and he works in the banking field. So. And he has he's a great family, and so he's tied up with those duties right now.
Right on.
So that's where he is. And then, but we actually did jam with Dave once for fun as well. So you know, the Like It family includes both Hide and Dave. And I suspect that there might even be some concerts where they both play.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And any new guitars in your collection lately, John? Any new guitars?
You know what? I have some cool stuff that you haven't seen. They're not necessarily new, but I have some stuff that haven't been in this room. And I'm gonna take my earphones off for just a second to show you one. And there's a great story behind this, okay? So stand by for 30 seconds.
Cool. And like I said earlier, guys, we are waiting for Corey Glover to join us, hopefully sooner than later. And then at 8 o'clock, we will be joined by Bobby Blitz of Overkill.
So, guys, this guitar here is a Greco, Greco, Mick Ralphs model. Now, Mick Ralphs was the guitar player, or you know, still is part of the band Bad Company. And this guitar was made in Japan by a company called Greco. Now, let me get that logo in there. Now, Greco, as you can see, it's kind of written almost in like the Gibson logo. And there's a really, really famous picture of Ace Frehley. It was even in the Kiss, like, you know, 1977, 1978 tour book of Ace playing a guitar that looked just like this. And Ace has actually played this exact guitar. There's some pictures online where you can see him playing this particular physical guitar. But the one he was playing in the 70s is different. But this is a 1977 Greco Mick Ralphs model in a cherry sunburst finish. It's called an MR-800. MR-800 and MR-1000s looked almost exactly, but they looked exactly the same. How cool is this, though? It's kind of like a Les Paul with a
beautiful guitar. Very beautiful.
Yeah. And this guitar was made in Japan in 1977. It's got a three-piece neck, set neck. Beautiful. And how crazy is this? This little piece of paper hasn't even been pulled off of here since the 70s. So somebody kept this in such good care that they left that on. And I bought this from a great friend of mine in Pennsylvania, Philly area. He's a great punk engineer. So this is just such a cool guitar. And Ace loves it. He's played it before. And like I said, there's some pictures of him online with it. But it is not the exact same guitar that he was pictured playing with in Kiss that looks exactly the same. So I wish it was. That would be even cooler. But it's still cool and it plays great. When you come here, Mark, you've got to play it. You're going to love it. It feels great. These Greco guitars are made great, made in Japan. And I love Japanese guitars. It's one thing I just have to say. I love Japanese guitars. And let me also tell you this. The guitars made by Epiphone in China, in their China plant, the brand new 2021, 2020 guitars, maybe even back to 2019, they have really stepped up their game. These guitars are out of control. I have a Epiphone Les Paul Modern in a rare finish called, it's like a metallic blue, radio metallic blue. And then I've got a great one in a Koa top. Koa is like an exotic Hawaiian wood. And these new Epiphones, I know you've had some Epiphones in the past. And I tell everybody, you got to check them out. They're that good. They're that good. I have nice. Every Gibson I could want. I worked at Gibson for 10 years, and I love Gibsons. And Epiphone is their sister company. And let me tell you, these new Les Pauls and other Epiphones are amazing. Dave Snake Sabo's got one. Tracy Guns has got the Kramer's part of the family. So a lot of cool stuff coming out of that factory.
Right on. Yeah, I really think that Gibson, I feel like, has really kind of stepped things up with bringing in more people with the signature models and stuff like that. So, yeah.
No doubt. Dave Mustaine, man. I mean, there's so much great, exciting news coming out of Gibson. And I'm just happy to be a family member of the whole Gibson team. I have to thank everybody out of the LA showroom, Peter Lienheiser and the whole gang. For setting Like It up when we went out there, because sometimes when we're doing what are called fly gigs, that's a current new term, fly gigs, because back in the day bands all got on a tour bus and they went around, but nowadays pre-COVID, you know, you do sometimes what are called fly gigs where you don't play with your real equipment and you rent it or you get it. And so Gibson was nice enough to loan Jamie and I Les Pauls, and they loaned Hide a great Gibson bass. So when we did the tour of California, we used the Gibsons that we had from the Beverly Hills or the Hollywood showroom. I brought one extra guitar with me in a flight case, but other than that, we used what we got out there, which was great. Thanks to Gibson.
Right on. Well, I texted Corey, and it looks like he read the text, but I don't know. He's still not here with us.
And Corey actually got back to you earlier today and said that everything was cool. And sometimes that happens, guys, with live stuff.
But yeah, I'm sure he'll be joining us momentarily. They actually said he's just logging on now. So good. We'll probably have to keep it on the brief side with Corey, because we do have Bobby Blitz at 8 o'clock, and I don't want to leave Bobby waiting. And we've had quite a history with Bobby Blitz too, man. I mean, from jamming.
No
with
doubt
him.
About it.
Now I wanted to ask you this. Do you remember when we were going to do a show with Dan Lorenzo and Blitz came to the rehearsal? He came to the rehearsal and we did some AC/DC with him. What song did we do? Is something off of, What Do You Do For Money, Honey, or something like that?
Probably, because that's the one of the songs that I know from when we were rehearsing. Yeah. And we were rehearsing in
Clifton.
Town.
Was it Clifton?
What's the town? No. We played in Clifton, but what's the town that the stadium is in? What town is that the big stadium is in?
Oh, MetLife.
MetLife. What town is that? Because we were rehearsing in a similar town with part of the same name, and I both of us can't think of it.
I'm not sure. But we did. Oh,
right,
I know.
Near the MetLife. What's the name of that town? How could we can't think of it?
Yeah, I'm not, Bergen. Okay. Bergenfield or something. Corey is with us now, John. So we're gonna bring Corey.
We'll talk about that later.
In right now to the conversation. And what an honor to always speak with this guy. I know we interviewed, or at least I interviewed him a couple of years back. And we're going to bring him in right now. Corey Glover from Living Color, guys. There he is. Corey, how are you, man?
Hey. Good, man. How are you?
Great to talk with you.
Corey, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. What's going on?
So the last time we saw you was at the Iridium when you did an amazing gig. I can't believe it was 2019 with Mike Orlando. And we had a blast that night. And we just wanted to catch back up with you and find out what's going on. I know you've done some stuff with Charlie from Anthrax, but you tell us what you've been up to. And thank you so much for coming on our show.
No problem. I'm doing a project with Mike Orlando, and which just trying to get some more songs together, and hopefully we'll get something out soon. I don't know how soon, but soon.
That's cool, because I know when we saw you play live, you played one new song that you guys
had
written together, right?
Yes, that we had written. We wrote a couple songs, but that was one of the better ones. Yeah, so we're doing some more of that. I'm also have this other band called Disciples of Barity. We put out a record last year, and we're doing a show coming up next month. I believe it's the 26th of June. At a place called Dingbats.
Oh, we know Dingbats.
Clifton. Yeah, absolutely. We know Dingbats. We lost your picture there, Corey. You still hear us?
Let's stand by for a second. I think Corey will be right back. It looks like he had like a little issue with his video. So, I suspect he will be back in a few seconds. So sometimes, guys, with this internet stuff, it's a little bit difficult. So you just have to bear with us. God, we had Corey for like a moment.
Our shortest interview ever.
Yeah. All right. He's a dingbats and it cuts up. Okay. No, I think we're going to be getting Mark. You might hear the control room in your ear. I don't know if they're saying anything, but
yeah, they said we lost him, and hopefully we'll have him back. Okay. I can text him.
You know what? I thought of it now. I can't believe it. Everybody always says MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Rutherford
is the town.
There he is.
Corey,
hey,
you're back. You're back.
I'm back. Sorry about that. Smitty called, of course.
Yeah.
So give us the update on the Mike Orlando music. Where are you guys with it? Are you still writing?
We're still writing and recording. We're really, this is pretty much a project between him and I, and we're trying to put together a band. Because this is Mike Orlando is the most amazing guitar player I've met in my life. And, you know, I know a lot of good guitar players.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And he is amazing. So you have to find people that match his...
the caliber of musicianship and, power. Wow.
Exactly. So that's part of the process we're going through right now. And as I said, I'm doing another project with these friends of mine called Disciples of Barity. With Corey Pierce.
Is that with Chris Moore?
No.
And Poncho? Different guys?
That was with Lynch. That was
Ultraphonics.
Ultraphonics, yeah. That was my West Coast project. We're trying to figure out what to do with that, and try to do that again, but who knows what's gonna happen. But the Disciples of Verity put out a record last year, and we're going to have a gig. We're actually playing live on the 26th of June at Dingbats in Clifton, New Jersey.
Right. We will definitely be there for sure. We love Dingbats, and we'll come anywhere to see you if it's in Jersey or New York or wherever. But I will undoubtedly be there. And Mark is not busy. I'm sure he'll be there, too.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. And Corey, then you're going to be doing a tour with Living Color too, right? And Everclear, is that happening?
Yeah, we're doing is Everclear and us and Hoobastank and a couple other bands. It's going to be like sheds and like amphitheaters pretty much for the month of
July.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. And then we're going to take a break in August and come back in September.
That is such great news. I mean, it's so cool to hear. I mean, these are really bands that I considered great. Mark and I both worked at MTV for many years, and when I'm still with the company, but I'm working more for a different division now, but all of your bands were the top bands on the channel when I was in heavy duty MTV mode. So I can't wait to see all of you guys. But
that'll be great. Yeah, it's gonna be fun. That's you know, it's gonna be very interesting. You know, we haven't played anywhere in almost a year. Last time we actually played, Living Color played live, was in October of last year. We played out in Pennsylvania just before the election. So, you know, it's been a while since we've been out playing. So we'll see what happens.
Right.
Amazing. I'm so excited.
One thing I did want to mention is Vivid, the Living Color record, just turned 33 years old. And yes, so many great songs off that record. I mean, one of my personal favorites was Open Letter to a Landlord. But another one was Funny Vibe. And you recently, it was probably a year ago at this point, you covered Funny Vibe kind of with Charlie from Anthrax. And it was a really cool version. How'd that all come about? And how'd you pull that off? Did he send you files? How did it work?
I did it from home, basically. He called. He sent me an email saying he wanted to do this project and he wanted me to do Funny Vibe. I was like, okay, how do you want to do it? And he says, basically the way you guys do it. I was like, well, that's not work then. so he sent me the files and, you know, it was basic. It's very basic. And this is at the beginning of the pandemic, so I didn't have anything set up in my house to record, except, you know, my tablet and a microphone. And that's the way I did it. And it worked.
Wow. That is out of control that nowadays you could do a studio quality recording from a tablet and a mic. And back in the day, we had to go into big studios. You paid $500 an hour and hired an engineer. And now you're doing it right there. And it sounds killer.
Yeah, that's great. You know? As you know, if I had known I could do that, I'd have spent the most of my life in my house.
Right on.
Hey, Corey, you put out a record about 23 years ago called Hymns, a solo record. Mm-hmm. And there's one song out on that record I just love. To this day, I still listen to it. April Rain, such a great, amazing tune. Would you ever consider doing a solo record again? I mean, you have so many different projects you're working with. What about just a Corey Glover record?
I've made Corey Glover records. I made one other Corey Glover record that was not a major label that I basically sold myself. And that was, it looks like this, called The Pledge.
Nice.
Cool.
And continuing in that whole thing and doing a solo record, I want to make another solo record. I was planning on making another solo record last fall, and then the pandemic hit and everybody was in the house and nobody wanted to come over and write songs. So So maybe this year I'll get to writing and recording a new record.
Corey, let me ask you this: you're like an amazing singer, as everybody is aware of, but prior to singing, you were into acting. You were in Platoon, the major movie Platoon, and you did Jesus Christ Superstar on tour. But now, before you got into Living Color and you were pursuing acting, how did you get your vocals like up to where they are? Like, how did you do that? Like, I mean, were you trying to do singing too, or what happened in the early days?
Yeah, I've been singing since I was 6 years old. You know, I sang in church and it wasn't something, you know, it was something I always knew I had. Like, you know, it's the thing, not to sound like I'm bragging or anything, but this is the one thing I knew I could do. There's a lot of things I know I don't know what to do, but I do them anyway. The one thing I do know how to do is sing.
No question.
And so I was never not singing, and I was to that end, I'm still acting to a certain degree. Where I get bit roles here and there and do theater and stuff like that, which I'd like to do as well. You know, I'm a musical theater guy, is what it is. So,
Right.
That's what my training is in musical theater. So being in a band is just another acting gig for me.
That's awesome. Right now, you know what, Corey? One thing that, Margaret, I'm sorry, I just got to say one more thing is that the voice is such a, it's such an important instrument. And to me, I don't know if you, like if, let's say you want to be a guitar player. If you practice forever, maybe you'll be as good as a Vernon Reid or Mike Orlando. But if you're a singer, I don't know if you, I think you have to have natural ability to get to be a real singer. What do you think? I think you do. I don't think everybody's cut out for it.
No, not everybody is, but everybody can sing. That's the point, though. Everybody can if they want to. You know, the thing about singing is, and at least the way that I approach it, if you sing something with enough conviction and believe in what you're singing, you don't have to have a great voice. You don't have to have a pitch perfect kind of thing. You know, there are lots of singers out here right now that I can point to that aren't really singers, but they deliver what they're singing in a very heartfelt and truthful way. And that's all that matters. If we had the ability to express ourselves truthfully, there'd be a lot better, more singers out there, I think.
Right. That's awesome. That's good for anybody who is an aspiring singer, that if you really put your mind to it and you give it your all and you believe in what you're doing, you could do it.
Well, that's what's most important, is that you believe that the words that you're trying, the feelings and the emotion and the truth of what you're trying to say. And that can't be denied, you know?
Awesome.
There's a bunch of songs I can think of that, you know, that don't rhyme, that aren't particularly sung very well, but you believe them when they say it.
Mm-hmm.
And once you believe them, it doesn't matter how they sound. I believe that song. I believe, you know, I'm always pointing to like Jeremy. None of it doesn't rhyme. Eddie sounds right. Good, but he's not really singing. He's emoting. And that's what's more important mm-hmm. than anything else.
No doubt.
Right on.
And
right
on. Everybody can remember those lines perfectly because of the way
right.
he executed it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Corey, we mentioned the movie Platoon that you were a big part of. I mean, what an amazing cast. Charlie Sheen, William Dafoe, Forrest Whitaker. I mean, how well did you get to know these people when you were on that movie?
We had to. We spent 3 weeks doing basic training out in the jungle. So we had to live, we dug our own foxholes. We lived on MREs. We went out on patrols, on ambushes every other night for 3 weeks. We did training every day from sunup to sundown every day.
Wow.
For 3 weeks. So we got to know people and, you know, you sit around and then you start talking to somebody like Johnny Depp. And talk about, oh, you're from Florida? Oh, you're a guitar player? Oh, really? We should do something. Whatever. I'm in a band. You should hear my. Want to hear my demo? So
right on.
Living Color,
right on.
Before Living Color got a deal, and I was kept playing my demo every 5 minutes and to people, annoying people with it. So, so we got to know each other. We really got to know each other. We really, you know, I shared a foxhole with Charlie Sheen. So that and for 3 weeks.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. Just what's unbelievable is how cool that is. But the fact that that's how you guys trained for that movie. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, what they were trying to convey was some realness about it. And
yeah,
we didn't have hotels. We didn't have hotels in those 3 weeks. We had that hole. We had, you know, we lived like when we got out of the jungle that the first day of shooting, you know, it looked like a real sort of platoon, a real bunch of guys from 1968 that just came out of the jungle in a time tunnel. And so
that is unbelievable. Wow.
We were hardened, and you know, the guy who trained us, his name is Captain Dale Dye, U.S. Marine Corps, retired. Hoorah. He told us what we're looking for is that 1,000-yard stare. You know, that's that kind of thing, like you've been through so much bullshit that, sorry if I cursed.
That's all right.
That it didn't, nothing mattered. Nothing ever mattered. That you had this look that looked through you rather than at you. And we got to it. You know, there's a scene where the camera goes past all of us and all of us are just looking past the camera. We're not even looking at the camera. And you can see that look on our in our eyes, like we've been through it. And we're gonna go through it.
That is unbelievable. What an amazing story. Corey, thanks so much for telling us that. I didn't know that. That is out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control.
Very, very powerful film, yeah. Too, if you haven't yeah, seen it in a while. Platoon. Yeah.
And, hey, Mark.
Do you go back and watch Platoon? Do you go back and listen to Vivid? How often do you revisit the art from your past?
I only watch Platoon if I flip past it.
Right.
Okay. And I was like, oh, shit, that's me. And then I watch 15 minutes of it and I turn away. With Vivid, you know, every now and then I have to listen to a song and all it does is bring me back to when we recorded it and what I was thinking about then and how naive I sounded, not even
okay.
Like was, but how young and simple I sounded. And it's, you know, just thinking back to the time us recording that or the time with us making this music and recording it and writing this music in, you know, in this cold water apartment above a refrigerator repair place in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with the L train going by every now and then, you know, and to go from that to, you know, the success we had with it was amazing.
Absolutely. You guys put out some great music back in 2017. Is there any plans for Living Color to do any new music?
Yeah, we are in the midst of going into like a rehearsal place just to figure out what we can do and what we want to do. We have an idea. We have a simple idea that we need to expand upon. And, you know, we haven't been around each other. You know, all of us are fully vaccinated. So now we can be around each other. And this way we are free to really go in without having to worry about each other.
That's amazing. I can't wait for the shows and we can't wait to hear what you're doing. And Mark, I'll let you close it up, but I got to ask Corey, I got to just tell you one little fanboy thing. That this has got to be between 25 and 30 years ago. So probably more like 26, 27 years ago. I was walking in Jersey City, New Jersey, in an area called Newport. And we had a mutual friend from MTV News and named Abby. And I ran into you. And I was like on top of the world because I go, I can't believe I ran into Corey Glover from Living Color.
Right. Abby Kears. Abby Kears.
Yeah, absolutely.
Abby Kears, who worked for MTV News, is a really good friend of mine. And she lived in Jersey City for a little while. And I come by and see her every now and then. And like, I'm taking the PATH train to Jersey City.
Yep, exactly. That's Mark and I both lived over there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was weird. You know, I'd hang out with Abby and she had another friend of ours that we all three of us hung out. It was cool. It was very cool.
Yeah, so I haven't seen
Abby Kearson. I don't know how long. If anybody knows where or how Abby Kearson is, please let me know.
I will find out.
Yeah,
I will definitely find out. Both Mark and I were great friends with her, and I even helped Abby move once. So, like, that's how good friends we are. So when you have somebody move, that means you're really good friends.
Exactly. Exactly.
So Corey, thank you so much. Corey, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. We're going to see you at Dingbats for sure. And then I can't wait to the big tour with Hoobastank and you guys. And who you said one other band, Everclear. Yeah, that's going to be great. So, and I'm happy to hear a real tour is happening. That's big news.
Yeah, it's a real tour. It's going to be fun to do. Get back on the horse again.
Right on. Corey, thank you.
You stay safe.
Please keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, folks.
Thanks, Corey. Thank you. Thank you.
Corey Glover of
That was awesome.
Living Color.
Thanks,
guys.
Corey.
Yeah, such a great band. And I mean, yeah, we didn't really even get to talk to him about his stuff that he's been working on with George Lynch. But if you haven't heard that, guys, Ultraphonics with George Lynch and Corey Glover have a great record, Original Human Music. And that came out back in 2018. I'd love to see them do some more stuff together too. Mike Orlando, I mean, it sounds like they're voice. In the mixing. What did he say? Did he say they're mixing it? I can't remember. We'll have to go back and listen to what he said.
I think they're still writing. They're still writing together.
Writing, okay. Right on.
I mean, cool. I think they have a lot of songs, but they're trying to like work out what's going to be what they want on the record.
Right.
Sounds
on.
Like they got too much material.
We are going to get right into our next guest right now. John, you want to introduce this gentleman?
Yes, we have one of the founders of thrash metal from New Jersey himself, Bobby Blitz Ellsworth of the great band Overkill. Bobby, how are you?
Boys, this is better than the long-awaited Friends reunion. You know what I mean?
I love it. Bob, we've done so many things together. You've been on our Talking Metal TV show with Turtlehead doing the great Motorhead classic Overkill, which your band is Overkill, and you've been on our radio show, and you've been on the podcast and everything. Bobby, you're one of our longtime friends of Talking Metal that we are. You're one of our idols. I mean, God, we're just gonna have to say it.
Yeah, I gotta tell you a quick funny story. I did an interview with a guy over in Eastern Europe one time, and he kept calling me an idol and a legend and all this stuff. And I said, it all comes into perspective when you see me cutting my own lawn on a Sunday. So,
right on.
No doubt about it. No doubt.
Bobby, I wanted to ask you, John threw out that word thrash. When's the first time you remember hearing the music that you did, that Exodus did, that Anthrax did, being described as thrash?
Oh, geez. I remember the first thrash I heard was obviously Metallica demo. Just the energy behind it. But I think later on from there, I mean, because that was, I guess, what was that, 81, 82? That
but they weren't really
around.
Calling it thrash at that time, were they?
They weren't. No, they weren't. But the energy was there. So that was the first time I heard thrash. But I think by the time that had toured, and that was 1986, we were on Megaforce Records, and we did, kind of a three-prong attack over in Europe with Anthrax, Overkill, and a California band named Agent Steel. And it was called the U.S. Speed Metal Attack. So I think it morphed out of there. I don't remember the exact moment I heard thrash, but I say it has to be 86, 87.
Was it a term that you think came from the press, or was it a term that came from the bands themselves? Or don't you really know?
I think it came from the bands. You know, I mean, even in the Exodus, I mean, it came obviously out of the Bonded by Blood record, thrashing all around, I mean, it was mm-hmm. writing the lyrics.
Right.
So obviously I think that moniker just stuck like glue to, it described movement. I mean physical movement, not a movement of music, but physical movement that, the pit, the stage diving, the moshing, et cetera. So thrashing all around out of Bonded by Blood, I think was the, probably the precursor to what became thrash after that. So it's probably as far back as you could trace it.
Right on.
And even the words. Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. Go ahead, John.
No, I was going to say even speed metal, like you said, that tour with Agent Still and you guys, that was called a speed metal tour. That term is also a term that I almost equate with thrash as well. Right, guys?
I do, for sure. I mean, I think I don't know if they're synonymous. I mean, because things have, you know, they've broken down and there's so many genres and subgenres, and they're more like nuances or characteristics. You know, it's a thrash band that plays speed metal. I mean, that's totally acceptable. I mean, I get right. it. I mean, were we a speed metal band? I don't necessarily think so. I mean, this was Feel the Fire. I mean, I think we were more cut from, you know, I mean, our speed came from, you know, the punk rock that we loved that was, you know, down at Max's Kansas City or CBGB's in the late 70s that we just kind of hung on to. For instance, the Heartbreakers or the Ramones. And then we added the new wave of British heavy metal, you know. So, I mean, we were more,
right.
you know, Iron Maiden type inspired, but with an energy that was supposed to never quit. And I think that that's where it worked, those two elements actually. You know, they work well together. The musicianship of that movement out of the UK and the energy of punk.
No doubt.
Right on. And you guys gave us a great record, "The Wings of War," just about a little over 2 years ago. And Overkill's pretty prompt with albums. I mean, you guys deliver the goods for us fans frequently. So, are we gonna see a new record by Overkill this year, you think? Number 20, right?
He who dies with the most toys wins. That's all it right. means.
I like that.
Yeah, I think we're going to call it, oh my God, it's 20 with a question mark after it. Yeah, this will be the 20th record. These are actually the, I'm on my phone because my computer mic is down. So I can hear you guys. These are the 20th record headphones that I'm working with right now in my, oh, wow. my little studio.
I was going to say they look. You want to hear something funny? I couldn't get my earphones working, and I had my studio headphones right next to me, and then finally I got these little earbuds going. So I was doing this.
This was a go-to when I was talking to Sophie, your production manager. I'm like, hang on, I got cans right here.
I got real headphones. Yeah, I got real headphones. Hey, speaking of, and I know this is out of order of what we were going to talk about with you, but I got to tell you, speaking of album titles, one of my, okay, I have the.
Well, John, hold that thought. Let's get the update on the new record first, if we can.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, me? Update,
yeah, update on new record.
Yeah, number 20, drum tracks are done, guitar tracks are filtering in. Obviously, during Peter pandemic, we are, you know, a little bit removed from each other. But I think that everybody is making the efforts. I mean, yesterday I spent, the whole day with Jason Bittner, our wonderful drummer, drove down from Albany, New York to hang out with me and have lunch because I had a birthday a couple of weeks ago and he wanted to see me. He goes, man, I just haven't seen you in so long. So I think that there's still that camaraderie that we have even during these trying times. And I've seen the other guys here and there. But it's, you know, does it have a vibe? Sure. It sounds like Overkill. And I, you know, are we a thrash band? Sure. We're a thrash band, but I've always thought that we've, you know, gone into different, you know, some people will tell you, oh, geez, every Overkill record's the same. In from the inside, the nuances are always different to me. You know, there's always a bit of rock and roll. There's always a bit of punk. There's always a bit of melody. It's devoid of melody. There's harmonies. There's, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what is this record going to be? I think it's going to be the next logical step, because regardless of the fact that we're, you know, our next tour is going to be playing senior citizen songs around the country. We obviously still think we're viable. And I mean, and that's what makes you, you know, valuable in the day, you know, is that, you know, you still think you have it. So we're not, you know, we're not mailing anything in. We're going for it, you know, full bore, balls out. Let's do it.
Right on.
That's
can't wait.
Awesome. Awesome. So, you know what, Muncie, I'm going to jump into a different topic here. One of our mutual friends, Muncie, just had a, a big anniversary, and I want you to tell us about his 30 years in the business, Muncie, from Skateboard Marketing. And you said at one point that he was like the sixth member of Overkill.
Yeah, Munz and Overkill have been synonymous almost since the beginning. I forget what label we were on at the time. I mean, it was post Megaforce and post Atlantic. I might have been Spitfire. He started working with us with Paul and Mike over there.
Yeah, I love those guys.
They were great dudes. I mean, they were perfect within the they had a love of the music. That's really what it was. You know, this wasn't right. Like you were dealing with, you know, we came off Atlantic and then we end up, I think we were on CMC with Tom Lipsky and then over to Spitfire. But, you know, and these kind of people had that love of the music. They have the same vested interest that guys like us did. I mean, if we're trying to get rich doing this, our plan sucks dick, you know, because it's 35 years in. But the point is those guys, you know, they liked that guys like us and other bands like us were in it for that reason. And Munz came on board, and it was just like it was this instantaneous thing. I mean, you guys know Munz. I just got his Dickie shirt, you know, 30th anniversary.
Oh, cool. Skateboard nice, market. Nice.
Yeah.
You know,
Bobby, I got to get you. I got you these fucking shirts.
So he sends it to me. But I remember him all the way back. And I mean, even when times were lean, you know, and it's kind of come back for bands like us, because I think that there's, you know, there's a truism to what we do. It's not a fake out. It's never been. We like doing it with people who like doing it with us. And Munz is one of those people. So, I mean, when he taps into the radio end of things, and the pride he has with what he does to say, Bob, you know, we're number one. You know, I got your number one here. I got your number one at CMJ. I got your number one at Hard Report. He loves doing this stuff. So it's more of a bond that is based on the same principles that we had on Spitfire, that we had on Megaforce in the early days. So I love Munz, you know. I remember a show out in Staten Island. We were playing a place called The Caves. I mean, it was just this.
I remember The Caves.
Side of this. Remember The Cage? Yeah, and it was managing. AJ was managing the place. He's like, I'll get you another case of beer. I'm like, all right, thanks. And I was like, you know, there's water leaking on the stage, you know? And he's like, well, it's just the way it happens here. And Munz is going, I think it's going to blow up. You want me to look at it? I'm like, stay the fuck away from it. Fucking electric service.
Don't get hurt. They yeah, clear of it.
Don't get hurt, man.
So Bobby, you put out a great covers record last year, right? Last year. Can you talk a little bit about that? BPMD.
Oh, sure.
American Made, right?
Yeah. Just a fun idea. You know, Mark Mengi and I, let's say thick as thieves when it comes to a little bit of ball busting with regard to me being a Jersey guy and him Long Island guy, which is obviously second class to people like us.
The Jersey, right?
But the
no offense.
He called me. He called me. It was, I guess it would be 2 years ago, this coming 4th of July. I got this great idea. I'm in the backyard with my kids. We're having burgers. I got the tunes on. I'm drinking beer. And I'm like, don't call me when you're drunk. I said, call me when you're sober. No, you gotta listen to me. So I listened to him, and I was like, you know, by the end of his pitch, I was like, dude, I'm in. I said, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, I sang some of these songs in the shower when I was a kid. You know, I mean, I have a little bit of years on those guys. I mean, Mark's 40. I just turned 62. So, I mean, the point is that I grew up around those bands. I mean, I knew, you know, Screamin' Teddy, and I knew, Cactus, and you know, I was a big Mountain right. fan, and, of course, Aerosmith, et cetera. So, for me, it was a no-brainer. It was like asking me to, I don't know, revisit my youth, you know, kind of a thing.
Cool.
So, I think we had, you know, Mike Portnoy and Phil Demmel, you know, were on board within 24 hours after that original conversation. And it was just a fun project, man. And I think, you know, it got released. It'll be a year ago next month it was released. And, you know, everything was starting to look cloudy and dark with regard to the pandemic, and everybody's lives were changing. And should we open the Jersey Shore? Should we open Long Island? What are we going to do? And we were like, I don't know if we want to release this. And then we said, you know, something, to hell with it. Let's release it. It's a fun record. Somebody's got to smile at this. Somebody's got to right. get something out of this, what it was intended, or let's say the intent we had when playing it. So I really enjoyed the yeah. project. The
American yeah, such Asian. A fun listen. And would you consider doing another one, or was it just a one-off?
I would do another one. I mean, I would take it. And this has actually been talked about. I mean, if you went to Made in the UK, you know, the 1970s. I mean, think of, you know, what you'd have to choose from. I mean, this is you know, pre new wave of British heavy metal by about, you know, 3 to 10 years kind of a thing. You know, I mean, I think there's, you know, one of the Rock-A-Rolla was released in 79, right? I mean, so it's kind of like you could pick from, I mean, Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac or, you know, Status Quo or get into these like deep cuts of bands that I knew when I was a kid. I would do another one. But let's see what Napalm says. I mean, they liked the results, and there's a distinct possibility. But obviously, first and foremost, Overkill.
Absolutely. Right.
Bobby,
nice.
I do want to ask you a question from the past, but first, my wife, Emily, she's just such a big fan of yours and just wanted to say a quick hi. She's
like, hi, Bobby!
Emily!
How are you?
How is it?
It's so good to see you.
I was good! I was good, Nate Orlando.
Oh, my gosh. How's your wife? I mean, we bonded over the Dutch thing.
Yeah, well, she's good. She's good. Like, good. I assume.
I just last time we saw you was at Starland Ballroom live.
Sounds right.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yep. I mean, we've seen you so many times live, but you know, the thing I was commenting with Mark earlier is like, it's one of the heaviest shows and it's so much energy and so much power, but there's also so much love. And I always feel like even if I get separated from Mark, your crowd, they always take care of me. I always feel like I have like 7,000 big brothers at your shows. I don't know if it's a Jersey thing, but like, didn't I comment?
Yeah,
like, weren't absolutely. They all buying me shots and like taking right. care of me? Yeah. And like, not, I mean, not in a weird way, in a cool way, but it's like just such a good energy at your shows. Like, I love your fans.
Emily, I tell you, I mean, the thing that cracks me up about playing Jersey, right, is that you can finish the first couple of songs that you run off in succession, maybe three songs, and the place has soaked it up like a sponge. And the first words out of my mouth is, Jesus, you get uglier every fucking year. And
more passionate every time. And the first time I thought about you live,
it ignites that. And then, I'm sorry.
Seriously. Oh, yeah. No, but, you know, like, but like, I tell the story about seeing you guys on Gigantor, broad daylight, right? What year was that? Was that like 2006 or something?
Seven.
Seven.
You remember Gigantor? Yep. So that must have been, yes. Where did we see that show?
PNC.
PNC. Also
that
Jersey,
was fun.
But you guys were like you just got, you killed it. And I always say that, like, you have this opposite thing. Like, a lot of guys, like, headbang when they're singing. It's like the bottom of your body that moves. Like, you headbang with your whole body. I'm like, it's something about your stage presence that is my absolute favorite.
Don't tell anybody that.
Mark knows you too.
I'm practicing.
Yeah. It's for later. He's practicing for a little bit later in the night. Like,
he's practicing for later. Was that too graphic? Mark's like, Mark's nudging me like to leave now.
Don't say it.
Somebody brought that up to me. Good to see you, Emily. Somebody brought that up to me once. It's like, how are you moving your hips with your head simultaneously?
Yes!
I'm like, I am.
I noted this. Like, you have a very, amazing stage presence, and the way you move is very different. So it's not just me. See,
absolutely.
All right, yeah. Bye, guys. I'll leave you alone.
Bye, Emily. Thank you.
So good to see you.
You're not in Britain.
So, thanks,
Bobby, I wanted to ask you. It's the 30-year anniversary of the album Horoscope, released in 1991 by Atlantic and Megaforce. What do you remember about that record? Any memories you can share, being it's the 30th year anniversary?
Yeah, I mean, that was a unique time, I think, in our lineage here. I mean, it was the first record where we were not an intact unit. You know, the original members were Rat Skates on drums, Dee Dee Verney on the bass guitar, Bobby Gustafson on guitar, and myself. And Rat left in 87 and was replaced with Sid Falk, who played with Paul Deano's Battle Zone. So he did Under the Influence, Years of Decay, and Horoscope. But the three guys who were writing songs primarily at that point were Bobby, pre-Horoscope, were Bobby, Dee Dee, and myself. So it was unique to, you know, to have lost one third of the brain trust or the, you know, the creative trust that we were doing. But I think that one of the cool things about it is we added the other guys, Merrick Gant, Rob Canavino, and for some reason, there was no doubt in what we were going to do. But I remember that when we had written all the songs, we put them together, and Megaforce was like, oh, Johnny was like, I'm not 100% sure about this without Bobby in there. And it pissed me off. I was like, what? But, you know, this is ego. And you need a little bit of ego to, you know, to get over the top at some time. And I remember Johnny had us kind of play the whole record live at L'Amour in front of the Megaforce staff. So that's one of the memories I have. And I remember us coming out and just kicking stuff over and playing pissed off, you know, like it was a real show while Megaforce watched. And, you know, we finished it. And Johnny walks over to me and goes, no doubt, we're going to do this record. And it really, because I think of all those circumstances and all the different nuances that were happening, losing a member, you know, what Megaforce had said to us, Atlantic was involved right now. I don't think Megaforce really felt that way. I think it was more Atlantic, you know, that felt that way. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, Horoscope came out of the cage like a roaring lion. I mean, that's, you know, it's one of the benchmarks in our history, in our lineage. So.
Absolutely.
Wow, what an amazing story. I never knew that about how you guys had to do that show to get that record really released the way you wanted to do it. But amazing.
Well, it was a hush-hush, you know, but I mean, it's also 30 years ago, and I mean, water's under the bridge. I mean, it's no big deal anymore, you know, but I mean, it was, we had a kind of audition for our contract. But again, I don't really think it was Johnny. And of course, it wasn't Metal Maria or any of those. I think it had something to do with Atlantic.
You're right. It was, you know, probably at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the Atlantic was maybe making decisions for Megaforce, and Megaforce wasn't making every decision at that point. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I was sitting in Atlantic with Dee Dee one time. I forget who we were talking to, but it was a suit and tie. And he was giving us all these plans, right? And the phone rang, and his secretary buzzed in, and he says, you have to excuse me for a minute. And he got out. I looked over at Dee Dee, and I said, we're fucked.
Oh, no. Yeah, this guy's got here's the deal. You do not – let me tell you this. If I was ever in a meeting at a record company, and Overkill guys were in the meeting – I would not leave for any reason. I don't care who was called. That's the key. Do not leave the meeting with Overkill, with Bobby and Dee Dee, or else. Here's what I think has to happen to a lot of people nowadays, and I don't want to get in big trouble, but I think what you were doing right there, that might need to happen to a few people.
The biggest compliment I ever got, I've been married twice, and my first wife, and I raised her son, and I was leaving the house one night, and he got this on, and I was like, we're going to go? He goes, we're going to go? And he goes, his mother goes from the kitchen, your father didn't live to 45 fighting fair.
Right. Bobby, you're amazing. So I want to ask Mark. Let me ask this quick question. I
sure,
Bobby. I got a car recently, and I've been driving all around Jersey. Now I'm 51 years old. I never had my own car. I lived in Jersey City. I worked in Manhattan. I just went back and forth on a PATH train. So the thing is that now I'm starting to discover all new areas of Jersey. Okay, first off, Ironbound is, in my opinion, the coolest name of an area. You guys have an album, Ironbound. And I also wanted to ask you just about the early days, like the clubs, because now I'm going to places like Asbury Park and Old Bridge and Sayreville, and I'm places I know you guys, like, lived in back in the day. You played gigs there. Tell us about two things. Tell us about the early gigs in Jersey and how it was like. And then I'm just curious about Ironbound, because I think that is one of the greatest titles I've ever heard of anything, Ironbound.
Well, congratulations on getting your license and your car.
Thank you. I know.
At 51, yeah.
At 51, yeah.
And you're in Jersey City, baby, so you're probably Margaret Haig, which is where I started my existence, was Margaret Haig Hospital in Jersey City. Ironbound first is, well, it's obviously the section in Newark.
Right.
It's the Portuguese section. I mean, it's where the Devils play, where the Prue Center is. I mean, there's great restaurants down there. It's kind of an ethnic place. I mean, it comes off of the port. You know, the port in Newark was, you know, is one of the biggest ports in the world. You know, it's bigger than anything New York has. I mean, it comes into Jersey and then just kind of moves over there and then feeds the rest of our country. But Ironbound came from someone, I think they were in a helicopter or a plane, and they were taking pictures of that part of Newark from the plane. And the person who captioned the picture said, it's as if the earth is if it's holding down the earth by iron ribbons. And the iron ribbons were all the train tracks coming out of the port. So that's where the Ironbound came from. That's, you know, the original.
Wow.
You know,
I never knew that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the iron ribbons that hold it to the earth, and all the energy that came out of it. And I always thought, you know, I mean, you guys know us. I mean, we're Jersey guys, tried and true. I mean, you know, we wear it on our sleeve. We think locally, but we act globally. If that makes any sense,
we bring
a little of it with us everywhere. So back in the early days, it was a little different. You know, I'm a little bit older, so I got to go to the clubs when there was cover bands all over the place. There's, you know, a place called the Soap Factory over in Palisades, Hole in the Wall down by Paramus, you know, Mothers in Wayne, New Jersey. And they were primarily cover bands. And then when we started coming around, it started switching over. You know, we used to be able to go see Twisted Sister playing at the Hole in the Wall, you know, once a month at minimum. You know, and it would be primarily originals, but they'd still play 10 covers and do two sets sometimes, you know?
Man.
But when we started looking for places, there was the Dirt Club. Oh, my God. What was the Dirt Club? It was over in – it was somewhere in Bergen County. And the guy who owned it was Johnny Dirt. And I think if you remember the – it's like an old punk club. But if you remember the Aquarian or the East Coast Rocker, he always had an ad in there. It only did original bands. Then we go to the Showplace down in Dover off Route 10. And it was like, you know, it was a strip joint during the day. And at night, you know, it would be a gig. And we'd be setting up, you know, we were like, I think we'd just done a demo, but we still had a stage set that was theater-esque. You know, we had our own pin spot lights and strobes. And we had built a big castle out of styrofoam that we would use on that stage. So it was that in the Showplace and the Dirt Club.
Was that the place that Metallica played their first gig with Kurt Hammett in Dover? It was probably at that same club, I would think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be. Because that's when Dave Mustaine was back, went back, and Kurt came in, and they were hanging out with the Old Bridge Metal Militia guys. You know, who were down in Old Bridge off Route 516. And, you know, Dover's whatever. It's, you know, 35, 40 minutes from there. And it's a good stage. And it didn't mean you'd have, you know, a ton of people, but you could gain a following. I saw Venom down there. I saw Raven.
Wow.
You know, at this place. And, right. You know, so, I mean, there was some cool stuff going on in Jersey. But it was also, you know, it was also unified with Staten Island, and you really wanted to get in New York City. And it, that was the hardest thing to do. I mean, we had done a gig at Trudy Heller's. We did a Gildersleeves gig. You know, these were unsigned gigs. But we'd play Staten Island, which is just, you know, a hop over the Gothels. And, you know, Staten Island, we were at Snoopy's, a place called October's, you know. I mean, so it started, you know, these original clubs, which would still have cover bands sometimes, started thriving, you know. And that was, I think, you know, the place for us to spin our craft, you know, as opposed to, unless you're doing Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, or Judas Priest covers, we don't want you. Which is what Jersey was prior to this era.
Wow. Right
on. What about Long Island? Did you guys ever go from Jersey to Long Island? Could you get gigs out there?
Well, we got not when we were unsigned. We did some Pennsylvania things. We found some people down in Maryland. We played a place called Coast to Coast down in Maryland, where a guy was doing like original speed metal or whatever the precursor to speed metal was. Sunday afternoons. I mean, we were down there with Nuclear Assault, you know. But the big thing was you had to get into here, you know.
The more, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No doubt about it.
You've arrived. Yeah, you've arrived. Yep. If you're in there and then you get called back for a second gig. And I remember a story, you know, George and Mike, who ran the place. I mean, they were brothers, and also with a good friend of mine, Frank Valais, and I'm friends with his son, Michael. We all, Overkill guys all used to take turns. You know, they had Lamore in Brooklyn, they had Lamore East in Queens. And we had these professional press kits. We had our demo, our 8x10, we had our biography, et cetera, et cetera. And it was my turn, and I walk up to George in out in Lamore East in Queens, and I said, "Hello, Mr. Parente. I'm Bobby Blitz. I'm from Overkill, and I'd like to give you a press kit." And he puts his hand on my shoulder and goes, "You're a nice kid. Your band sucks."
And that's not true. That's not true.
Inspirational, if you think about it, right?
Well, it's a stuff like
that. Did he know that, or was
that
just him trying to do tough love? I'm saying, did he really think that, or was that just what he said to everybody who came up to him?
I think he thought it, because that wasn't the exact quote. He said, "Kid, you're a nice kid. I got 40 of your fucking press kits on my desk."
Well, you came out on top, Bobby, and history will record all of that. So you're on top.
Hey, 2 years later, we were a house band, you know, at Lamore's.
I'm amazed, but Bobby, that you guys were doing that. Like, I remember putting the folders together and the freaking 8x10 and the bio page and the tape and the seat, whatever it came. I didn't know you guys had to do that kind of stuff. You know, I didn't know how that happened back in the day.
Hey, it was social media back then, if you think about it, right? I mean, you had to put together your package, let them know who you are. I mean, it was business. It was also, you wanted people interested in you. I mean, your social media was shaking hands. It's like, hey, don't touch my car. I'm just putting a flyer into your windshield wiper. You know, that kind of
thing. Right. I'm not going to, yeah. Not,
right.
Yeah, amazing. That is amazing.
So it was different. You know, it was different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Well, Bobby, we do have to wrap it up in a few minutes here. But before we let you go, are there plans for Overkill to return to the road at this point?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, we're ready. You know, we blocked out the U.S. through February, blocked out some European shows in March, April. I mean, I got something in Indonesia. There may be something before the end of the year over in Europe. I mean, there's a buzz that's just starting to happen because everything's opening up, and it's one of the big ones. So I'm not sure if you guys are aware of it, but it's August to September. And there may even be a Jersey show before Christmas time.
Oh, that would be amazing. Awesome.
Cool. We would love that. We would love that. But thank you for spending some time with us tonight on the Talking Metal live stream. We really appreciate it. We wish you all the best, and we are so ready for Overkill to return to the stage.
Every time I see you guys, I feel like playing a Motorhead cover. I'm telling you.
Bobby, that's my favorite thing that I've ever done, in my opinion. I don't want to offend anybody else, but the greatest thing I've ever done on stage or on any stage is playing with you during Turtlehead, during Overkill. That was my favorite thing.
That was just awesome. And you know, the thing was, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, obviously, I knew what to expect from Frank and Portnoy. But I didn't know
what to expect from
you guys. They had no idea, and you killed it. I mean, you were Filthy Phil Campbell and Wurzel.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bobby, thank you so much. Forever. And we're going to see you. Whatever show you book, we're going to be there, and you can depend on it.
Thank you, boys. Good to see you, man.
Thanks, Bobby.
Take care. Bye-bye, guys.
Cool. Bobby Blitz. What a great interview. Guys. Yeah, so much fun hanging with him always. Man. And we cannot wait for the live music to return. We got Ace coming back. It sounds like maybe a Overkill New Jersey show before the end of the year. Emily, John, and myself, we will all be there for sure. Yeah. John, always
guys,
great hanging with you.
I wish you could be here at this place. Yeah, I said wish you could have been here tonight, but I know it was short notice. But the next Talking Metal Live, we're going to do in person. Let's make that a definite announcement. We're going to do it in person. And why don't we just plan it now? We'll do it here. I have a set made up with like three stools or whatever we need. And we'll get the cameras ready. We'll get the lighting ready. We're going to rock it out. We'll use we have to thank our crew. Let's thank our crew, Mark.
Yes, absolutely. Big thanks to everyone.
SDNbroadcast.com, top crew.
Yeah. For all your virtual.
Right down here.
Yeah.
It was.
Excellent.
It was like a second ago.
Yeah.
we're going to thank that, and we'll do it up. We're going to do it up. And it's so nice. We want to thank all of our guests. Hank Reeves, Dash Vodka. He supplies us with vodka. You can't do any better than that. That's good. And then Corey, we just hung out with him at one of our last concerts that we did, 2019, at the Iridium. And then Bobby, who we have a big history with in many different aspects. And he is literally, Bobby's a legendary heavy metal musician.
Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt
John,
about it. And yep.
Thank you. Always good hanging with you. You have a great week, man. And next time we are hanging in person, maybe we'll even get together before then and do just a podcast.
Oh, I think we should. Yeah, podcast. We should maybe do like an audio podcast prior to the next live video show.
Absolutely.
Oh, John, I just want him to make all right. Dinner.
Yeah. By the way, all those Emily says she just wants you to make us dinner. So.
I'll make you dinner any night of the week, guys. I got a big. Yeah. Let me tell you this. Real quick before we sign off, a guy named Jean-Paul Giraud, who is the head chef at the one of the big hotels in Glasgow, Scotland, told me today that my fondant potato that I made was equal or possibly even better than a few of his trained guys. And that is like somebody could say, John, you played the greatest guitar solo in the world. That is the equivalent of that compliment. And I said, well, I don't have any actual talent, like, or nobody trained me into do this. But he goes, look, I could see your photos, and that fondant was it. And he said, he thinks that I have a natural talent. So anyway, guys, I have an idea. What about one of these days? This is a separate idea. I have a little bar area with some seats. You and Emily are there. And then I try to make something, we tape it. And then we see if you like it. And if you like it, it's killer. If we don't like it, you get that sound. Bzzz. And then that means I lose.
Okay.
You know, would you take part
in
that?
It's like Chopped. Yeah.
Yeah, right it's on. Like Chopped. I'm the host, and you can be the host too. We're the host, but I'm the guy, but I might get chopped at the end of the show of my own thing. That okay?
Right. All right. That's
okay,
a deal,
let's
man. Let's
it.
Do it. Let's do it.
But anyway,
guys,
but one way or the other, I'm going to make you dinner and you and Emily dinner. And I already got some ideas and that's going to happen. But anyway, keep rocking, everybody, for watching us. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Emily. Thanks to the SDN team. Thanks to Bobby, Corey, and Hank Reeves. And we're rocking, and I'm ready to go another 2 hours.
Right on. Yeah.
Want to keep it going? No, I'm kidding. I'm just joking.
Yeah, we got to let people go home. But thank you,
everybody.
Everyone,
SDN crew, keep it going. Yep. I will just talk till 6 a.m. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I kid. Who says that? I kid. Somebody
not
says
sure.
that.
You.
I'm just kidding, people. I do.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Keep rocking.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.